my fellow Americans, I have just signed, as you know, a certificate declaring my candidacy for the Democratic nomination for President of the United States. I chose this historic site of Philadelphia because it was here that our republic was born. This is the city of William Penn, who spoke of peace and brotherhood, and of Thomas Jefferson, who gave us the great documents of our democracy. And it was here that those precious words, "We the people," was proclaimed as the foundation of our political institutions. The next president of the United States will join all Americans in commemorating the 200th anniversary of our country. Will we then be a country at peace with others? Will we be a country at peace with ourselves? Will we have healed the wounds of war and violence and bitterness? Will our system of government be sensitive and responsive to the pressures of change that flood in upon us? Or will we be paralyzed and muscle-bound? Will we have stirred America to a higher standard of living and a better quality of life? Will Americans be at work building, creating, developing? Or will we be limping along, despondent, divided, and discouraged? These are the great issues of this election. The man who occupies the presidency has the obligation and the opportunity to revive that feeling of common purpose which once inspired this nation, that mutual respect among the generations, among the races, and the groups in this country. History will note the failures of the Nixon administration, and they will be the subject of this presidential campaign. Regrettably, we cannot escape their consequence. What we do now, however, can help overcome them. So I ask you to join with me, and let's face up to the realities of our present posture. Our urgent, immediate need, first on the agenda of national priorities, is to end the war, and to do it now. I speak frankly to you. I served as the vice president during the period of our heaviest involvement there. Yet when I spoke to the American people during my campaign for the presidency in 1968, I said that my experience had led me to the conviction that however noble the intent of three presidents who felt that our Vietnam involvement was essential to our national security, that position was no longer valid. And I pledged in 1968 an end to the bombing, a ceasefire, and a program of immediate troop withdrawal. And my fellow Americans, I would have carried out that pledge. It is taking President Nixon longer to withdraw our troops from Vietnam than it took us to defeat Hitler. Had I been elected, we would have been out of that war. And I repeat that pledge to you now. But there are other urgent matters. We must revitalize our economy and put our people back to work and do it now. We must create a respect for law and for justice if we are to stop crime. The attack on drug abuse, which has taken on epidemic proportions, must be given the highest priority. And a massive effort must be undertaken to make our cities livable, safe, and clean, and we must undertake that effort now. Farmers today are the victims of depression prices, and we must raise that farm income We must strengthen rural America so that its areas of poverty can become areas of beauty and economic opportunity. Our air, our lakes and streams, you and I know, must be cleansed. The fulfillment of the American dream requires that every American family to have a decent home, food, health care, and education. Yes, I know, these are difficult challenges, but to do less would be unworthy of us. And to achieve these goals requires the energetic participation of government and the leadership and the inspiration of a dedicated president. Presidential delay, timidity, vetoes, divisiveness will not do the job. A total commitment is necessary. And that commitment must be based on a supreme confidence in the American people and on our institutions. America is not sick, but we have experienced unprecedented change, tossed about in the turbulence of violence, confusion, doubt, and fear. What we lack is leadership and vision. Without vision, said Isaiah, the people perish. So I say America needs renewed faith in itself. The fabric of America is strong and resilient. Our nation has withstood civil war. We received into our midst wave after wave of immigrants who ultimately added their richness and cultural diversity. We have weathered economic depression and vast natural disasters. And while the threads of our civilization and national unity are often stretched taut, you know and I know they have held and are the stronger for their testing. There is a message from the great emancipator, Abraham Lincoln, that speaks to us today. Listen well to these words. The dogmas of the quiet past are inadequate for the stormy present. The occasion is piled high with difficulty, and we must rise to the occasion. Our case is new, so we must think anew. We must disenthrall ourselves. Yes, we must think anew, and we can. A nation that could build arsenals of awesome weapons, you and I know, can build schools and the hospitals and the child care centers and the libraries necessary to enrich our lives. A nation that developed and financed a vast Marshall Plan to rebuild war-torn Europe can build another and develop another to rebuild our own neighborhoods and our crime-ridden cities. A country that could reconcile its differences with wartime enemies surely can summon the decency and the justice necessary to reconcile the differences amongst our own people. As I see it, our task is one of reconciliation, of rebuilding, and of rebirth. Our nation was founded on the principle of faith and trust in the people. We the people of our Constitution's preamble has too often been forgotten by those who govern or seek to govern. But it is in the people that our strength, yes, my strength, lies. And we must bring into the mainstream of our society the energies, the talents, and the experience of millions of Americans who have been barred through the years from full participation or been forgotten or been ignored either by law or by custom. Here, my fellow Americans, are the new reserves of energy and vitality that this nation needs and that can be called upon. And I do not speak of alone of national or racial minorities, important as they are. I speak, for example, of the women of America, who rightly have come to expect and demand full equality with men, equal pay for equal work, equal access to the professions, removal of the artificial barriers that have barred those women who so desire from full participation in the intellectual, economic, and political life of our nation. Here again. Here again, the President of the United States must lead. He must persuade and he must encourage the community at large to change its ways, to change its way of thinking and acting. The elderly of our nation have been neglected. They've been shunted aside, their experience and wisdom often ignored. I pledge my energies to bring them back into the mainstream of American life and to treat them with dignity and compassion. To the young of this nation, we owe a paramount obligation because the tomorrows are theirs. The full opportunity to help strengthen that sense of community without which we cannot build our nation, this we must give to them. The young must be full and effective partners, and I shall make them so in whatever we seek to do. Full and effective partners in restoring the physical beauty and the human vitality of America, in fulfilling another young man's dream, Thomas Jefferson as a young man, his dream of a people united in friendship and compassion and mutual respect. To the young, I pledge an open heart, an open mind, and open arms. And I ask them here from this platform today to join with me and taking our message to the American people. But even as we conserve the values of the past, our eyes must be set on the future. It is not yesterday that is important, it is tomorrow. Our challenge today is to be as creative and wise as the men who met here in Philadelphia almost 200 years ago. Our times require the capacity to solve problems. I learned early in my public career that concern is not enough. Outrage is not enough. Even a good idea is not enough. Certainly, rhetoric, even from high places, is not enough. As mayor, senator, and vice president, I have learned to translate ideas and ideals into action. For example, it was not enough to speak against crime when I was a mayor of Minneapolis. It was necessary to take action. And I proved that a big city could have law and order and justice all at the same time. It was perhaps easy to talk about medical and hospital care for the elderly or a youth conservation corps for the young and the Peace Corps. But my initiative and action were required to bring about legislation which did in fact create Medicare, the Job Corps, and a Peace Corps. And they are the facts of today. It's all very fine and so necessary to speak of peace. But I early decided that talk would be wasted if we could not get concrete action. And I say humbly that I am proud of my role as an architect of the first treaty to prevent the spread of nuclear weapons, the so-called treaty that stopped the testing of nuclear weapons. In my years of government, I have learned one other basic fact. We may suffer an occasional defeat, We all have, and we all do. But with determination and faith, a man or a nation can and should grow from defeat. Persistence and tenacity are old American virtues. I was defeated for mayor the first time I ran for that office, but I was elected the second time. I was defeated for the vice presidential nomination the first time I sought it, but I was later nominated and elected. I was defeated, as you know, for the presidential nomination in 1960, but I was nominated in 1968. I was defeated in the presidential elections in 1968, but I returned to the battle determined to do my best to achieve victory. Friends, we Americans have gone through much of the same kind of trial and error. We know that, of victory and defeat. That's been our life. We've had disappointments, publicly and privately, and we've taken some severe blows. But this I know. I know that the American people are determined to get back on their feet, to put our house in order, and to get on with the work that needs to be done in building this nation and to get our country moving again. So let me conclude my message to you today by reading to you from an undelivered speech of a young president whose philosophy I share. He did not live to see his commitments fulfilled, but he gave us such hope. And I want to share with you now the words of the late and beloved President John F. Kennedy. Listen well. Here's what he said to us. For this is a time for courage and a time for challenge. Neither conformity nor complacency will do. Neither the fanatics nor the faint-hearted are needed. And our duty as a party is not to our party alone, but to the nation, and indeed to all mankind. Let us not quarrel, he said, amongst ourselves when our nation's future is at stake. Let us stand together with renewed confidence in our cause, united in our heritage of the past and our hopes for the future, and determined that this land we love shall lead all mankind into new frontiers of peace and abundance. With your trust, your help, and your confidence, I pledge to you that we shall fulfill this commitment, and we shall achieve these goals. Thank you, my friends. Thank you.